The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Some people expect solutions to be expensive to be effective. This is not true. Everyone needs somebody who can be supportive and a guide. You'll find the answers you're looking for and the tools to both find answers and offer solutions on the Dr. Melanie Show. Now, here's your host, Dr. Melanie Barton.
Welcome to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. People, for a variety of reasons, can become almost addicted to substances. This episode is a good education for those who might be wondering, am I addicted? Or is someone I care about becoming addicted to substances? J. Wesley Boyd, MD of Harvard University, along with Eric Metcalf, wrote the book Almost Addicted. Dr. Boyd will explain what almost addicted means. And in the second half of the show, Dr. Rob Van Overbruggen, author of Healing Psyche, will tell us about the mind-body connection to cancer, how using various psychological approaches can have a positive effect on cancer. I am truly fascinated with what I've learned from both of these guests just by reading their work. I know you will be also. First up, let's hear my interview with Dr. Boyd. Today, I'm talking with Dr. Wesley Boyd, who wrote the book, along with Eric Metcalf, called Almost Addicted. And I was really impressed with your book because I've been a drug and alcohol therapist for probably close to 30 years. And this category of almost addicted is something that needed to be created a long time ago. So I'm glad you wrote this book about it.
Well, thank you for saying that, and also thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's my pleasure. So can you describe for our listening audience exactly what is the definition of almost addicted?
Well, I also, like you, have worked in the substance abuse field for several decades, and certainly have seen my share of people who have substance use problems that rise to the diagnostic level of either substance abuse or substance dependence. Mm-hmm. And those people certainly can get on the radar screen because their drug problem is so significant that it catches people's eyes pretty readily. But before you even get to that level of drug abuse, there is a large swath of people who are using drugs in ways that might be causing problems in their life here and now, but don't rise to a diagnostic level. And so those are the people who we've addressed the book to, and that's what we're calling almost addicted. So not fully addicted, not diagnostically problematic from a professional point of view, but causing problems here and now despite that.
Okay. Could you kind of give a delineation between or an example of somebody that's not addicted, somebody that's almost, and somebody that is truly addicted?
Well, presumably there are people who use drugs here and there in ways that do not cause any problems in their life. They don't cause health problems, work problems, family problems. And, I mean, apart from the legalities of using drugs, I wouldn't even say those people are almost addicted. They're just using them and going about their business. Mm-hmm. For people who are fully addicted to drugs, drugs have really taken over in their lives, and there are serious, large aspects of their lives which have been problematic or taken huge hits as a result of their drug use. Mm-hmm. And so for those people, we might say they're fully addicted. And along with the problems in their life, they develop tolerance to the drug, meaning that they need to use more and more to get the same effect. Mm-hmm. They will go into a physical withdrawal if they stop the drug. And so that's what we call addicted. But between those two realms, the almost addicted, their lives might be going along well enough, in major areas of their life might not be put in jeopardy through their drug use, but nonetheless, maybe they're, you know, occasionally missing work here or there. They're getting into trouble in the family or having, you know, problematic relationships otherwise. Maybe they're giving less than their best effort at school or at work because of drug use. And these are the people we're saying are almost addicted. So between the people who have no problems whatsoever that we can tell from their drug use and those who are fully addicted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I know for my own situation, I've been in recovery 28 and a half years, and had this category existed back then, it might have been how I would have been qualified. But if you go into like an AA meeting or NA meeting, they'll tell you, well, you know, we'll save a chair for you because you're not fully there yet, but keep practicing and you'll get there. So it's interesting to see that, you know, there might be people that never cross over into that fully addicted state.
Right. And it's those people for whom we've written this book to address their drug use here and now, because it really is causing problems. Granted, not major life problems where, you know, housing, romantic relationships, jobs, and all of that are thrown into jeopardy, but causing problems nonetheless. We also wrote the book because there are a number of people who are using drugs in the almost addicted range who will progress into full-on addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I tell the story in the book about one such individual whose drug use was in the almost addicted range for a year or two, and then for various personal and professional reasons, it really escalated into full-on addiction. And that person's life came crashing down as a result of it. And I would say if that person had caught it, caught the drug use before it went on to full addiction, addressed the issue, gotten help, might have been a whole different story.
Mm-hmm. Well, the test that you give in the book on page 30, the DAS test, the drug abuse screening test, it says if you're between 1 and 5, you're classified as almost addicted, 6 or more as addicted. So can you determine who's going to progress to the actual addicted, or if they are actual addicted, can you ever revert back to almost addicted?
Well, those are great questions. And because this whole category of being almost addicted has really never been delineated before, I don't think we have clear measures to know who from that area, you know, the almost addicted area, is going to progress to full-on addiction. I don't think we have predictive capabilities yet. It's absolutely the case, though, that if people are using drugs in ways that suggest they're fully addicted, that they can back off. I mean, usually if someone's addicted, the advice is you need to stop all drug use whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably there are some people, though, who can back off and lower their score on the test. And the test includes questions like, have you abused prescription drugs? Have you lost a job because of drug use? Have you been in trouble at work because of your drug use? And so on. So just lots of questions to really get people thinking about their relationship to drugs and what it means for them.
Mm-hmm. And when you say drugs, do you include alcohol in this category?
Yes, absolutely. Although in our book, we focus on drugs of abuse other than alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that primarily because there's another book in the series called Almost Alcoholic.
Oh.
But in my practice and in my everyday reality, drug abuse includes anything from alcohol to any of the illicit drugs, pills, you name it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Including people with eating disorders who overuse laxatives and things like that?
Well, that's into a slightly different arena.
Right.
There certainly are addictive behaviors like gambling, which
mm-hmm.
When you really tear it apart, it looks a lot like substance use. And
yes.
So I think for some people, eating disorders would probably fall into that category, and certainly abusing drugs as part of an eating disorder
yes.
would definitely fall into that category.
Do you think, in your professional and personal opinion, that there is an actual addictive personality type?
There's a growing body of evidence that we ought to start thinking about addiction as more of a syndromal illness.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that, yes, there are people who suffer from addiction and are ill as a result of it, but how they express that addiction might be very different one from the next. In other words, mm-hmm. one person might express it through abusing alcohol, another might have a predilection toward marijuana, for someone else it might be gambling. And certainly in my own practice, and perhaps in yours, I've seen people who seem to have this addictive personality, and if they don't get healthy by really addressing the core issues that are making them ill, they might give up alcohol if that's
right.
what's causing problems in the moment, and then morph into using some other substance.
That's
and then
right.
lo and behold, they give that up, and then they get into dangerous sexual behaviors or gambling or something like that.
Yes.
So I think the short answer is yes. I gave a slightly longer one.
Okay, that's fine. So do you think that if marijuana became legalized, that would increase the numbers of almost addicted to more addicted, or do you think because it'd be more readily available, it'd be less of a problem, or do you have an opinion?
I do have an opinion, and it's fairly complex. Since marijuana has just been fully legalized in a couple of states, I think we're going to have a lot of data in the next several years to really tell us exactly what it means
mm-hmm.
to have marijuana legalized, and not just for medical purposes.
Right.
In general, though, I think that the stigma of marijuana for some, and certainly the fact that it's illegal in many situations, makes it less attractive to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
If you remove the stigma and remove and make it legal, I am concerned that more people are going to be using marijuana. And I'll just say this about marijuana, and we address this in the book. A lot of people think it's a harmless substance. It's a natural substance, and therefore, why on earth should we be worried about it? But, using marijuana, especially among adolescents, even a little bit, increases risk down the line for depression, anxiety, psychosis,
mm-hmm.
So it can cause a lot of problems in the moment. I've seen a lot of people's grades drop off when the second they start using marijuana, even infrequently, but even downstream it can cause problems
mm-hmm.
for folks.
Definitely, yes. Do you see a common factor in the lives of the people who choose to do something about their almost addicted condition?
That also is a really good question. I think if there's any kind of single thread in people who actually decide to take action, whether it's, they're using drugs in an almost addicted manner or in a fully addicted manner, is that they have taken an honest look at themselves and honestly appraised what their relationship is to drugs and what drugs or alcohol have cost them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the common denominator to the first step in taking action. That is, seeing as clearly as possible, trying to remove blinders. I mean, certainly, people who use drugs often delude themselves about the dangers of the drugs and the problems that drugs are causing. And breaking through that probably is the first step toward getting healthy.
Okay. Well, at this point, it's a good place for us to break. So let's take a break, and we'll pause, and then we'll come back after the break.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Step up to the microphone. View the finalists right now on VoiceAmericaKids.tv. America's next great star is waiting to be discovered. Step up to the microphone is an exclusive presentation for VoiceAmerica.tv, where you can see and hear America's next top child star. The program is hosted by Voice America's own Cassie Frazier, and new episodes will be available every week exclusively at VoiceAmericaKids.tv. You can say you saw them at the beginning of their superstar career. Tune in to VoiceAmericaKids.tv.
Do you have or know someone who has multiple sclerosis, Lyme disease, or any other chronic illness? Advanced Cell Training is a restorative, self-healing modality that I, Dr. Melanie, have had phenomenal results with, reducing physical symptoms I've had for over 20 years. This process can be done right in the comfort of your own home. Request their free DVD at advancedcelltraining.com. That's advancedcelltraining.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. Do you know someone who fits the category of the almost addicted to some kind of a substance? Well, I want you to listen and find out what you can do, whether it's you or somebody you love and care about. I'm back here with Dr. Wesley Boyd. We're talking about the book he co-authored with Eric Metcalf called Almost Addicted. And I know in my practice that often mental health issues and addictions go hand in hand. Has that been your experience also in your practice?
Oh, that's absolutely my experience. And the correlation goes both ways. So, and we quote some studies in the book actually along these lines that say that if someone comes in to a medical facility with an identified substance use problem, the chances of them having a mental illness of some sort, otherwise depression, anxiety, you know, psychosis, you name it, is quite high, to the tune of usually over 50% is a figure I see a lot. Conversely, if someone comes in with an identified mental health issue, such as depression, anxiety, the chances that they also are using substances potentially in a problematic manner is above 50%. So there's a very large correlation going back and forth. And in some instances, it may even be causative. That is, you know, people might actually start using substances to try to self-treat psychiatric issues, or conversely, anyway. Mm-hmm. So there's huge correlation going both ways.
And I find with people that are bipolar, they're often hesitant to take prescribed medications to manage the illness, but they don't seem to have a problem taking substances that aren't prescribed to do that. And they want to be in control, and yet when they do these things that are not legal, then they're not in control. So it's a paradox.
Yeah, and bipolar illness is just so potentially devastating in so many ways. That illness, among the various psychiatric diagnoses, carries with it one of the highest rates of substance use. And also, you may know, carries with it one of the highest likelihoods that people with bipolar illness are going to kill themselves, you know, compared to other psychiatric diagnoses. The reasons for both of those statistics probably are similar, namely that, you know, in bipolar illness you go between feeling pretty well, pretty normal, having a, you know, solid platform, to being, you know, terribly depressed and then, you know, possibly going from there into mania. And I think just the variability of mood states for people can be so devastating, so traumatizing that, you know, it's not, unfortunately not surprising that many of them will reach to substances to try to feel better, level things out, and even, you know, reject medications otherwise, as you said.
Yes, yes. For people that do have a mental health condition as well as a almost addiction state, can they manage both successfully? Isn't it full time to try to manage just one of those?
That is a great question. I think the research overwhelmingly shows that the best rates of success are when you try to treat both simultaneously.
Yes.
So if someone comes in with a substance use disorder and some kind of psychiatric issue otherwise, addressing one without addressing the other is probably going to fail, or certainly more likely to fail than if you were to address both of them. Now, that said, sometimes it's hard to tell if there's an independent psychiatric diagnosis if someone comes in having been using substances for several years. Because
right.
if someone has been using, you know, anything that's on the depressive end of things, alcohol, marijuana, certain pills, and they appear to be depressed, well, is that, are they depressed because they've been using depressant substances?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, would they have become depressed otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
And so teasing apart whether or not the substances might have caused what we're seeing, you know, in a psychiatric way, otherwise, it's often hard to tease apart.
Mm-hmm. When somebody goes in for inpatient and they've got this dual diagnosis, and oftentimes they'll take them off cigarettes and off caffeine and, you know, all the stimulants and depressants, you know, do you recommend that they go off everything cold turkey under supervision, or do you think a smaller steps towards that is better?
Well, I think you have to pick your battles, and although I absolutely detest cigarettes, I can't stand them because of the medical problems they cause. They're the biggest killer in our country. And the tobacco industry is just one of the most evil as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no love whatsoever for cigarettes. I do have sympathy, though, for patients who might find themselves on an inpatient unit, which is often a scary place. It's a place you go of last resort, to then pull all substances, even tobacco and caffeine. Sometimes that seems a little draconian if really you've got other issues which in the moment are causing, you know, far bigger problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as you said, I think taking small steps might be a better approach, although I definitely understand the reasoning behind, you know, pulling all substances that might affect mood, presentation, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. That's what happened to me. I had a medical condition, and so I was detoxed off everything all at once in a two-week stay in the hospital. And so I haven't gone back to the caffeine or the addictive substances since then, but it was pretty hellish going through that withdrawal in the hospital. So I can identify with those people.
Right. And you might make an argument, well, you know, at least you've got medical attention while you're undergoing withdrawal from multiple substances. You know, so that is a case. There is a case to be made for that, but it still, you know, might be best to say what, you know, substances are the main source of concern right now. What are the main issues that led to this particular hospitalization, and directly address those and save the caffeine fight or the tobacco fight for another day.
Right. And there's a whole category we can get into on another interview of people who, like me, were medically prescribed the medications for a real medical condition, but I was trying to self-medicate to get rid of the pain. So, you know, that's a whole other category of people who are, you know, they're almost addicted to what they're prescribed, and trying to manage that while you're in pain, sometimes you don't think clearly and do the best decisions.
Yeah, and I've actually been doing even more reading about prescription drug abuse since we wrote the book than I did in the process of writing the book, because so many people have brought up that issue that I felt I needed to be better versed on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, among adolescents, for example, many, many, many of them are abusing prescription pain drugs and prescription anxiety drugs. And overwhelmingly, the place where they first get those drugs is from their own parents' medicine cabinets.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's certainly something of great concern, especially the opiate pain medications, which I think are particularly dangerous because of their appeal to some people, and because in overdose they can very easily cause death. And then, as you said, when people are trying to, you know, help themselves for pain, may have a legitimate prescription from a doctor who's well-intended, it can be very tempting, if the pain is more than you can bear, to start using more substances than, you know, prescribed.
Mm-hmm.
And that can really cause problems. And in fact, the story I was alluding to before about the person who was almost addicted for several years, it was with opiate pain medications.
Right.
This physician, it was actually a physician, had some left over from a procedure and would use one once a month just to kind of relax, chill out, check out. And, you know, when things got rougher in that person's life, you know, marriage difficulties, work difficulties, you know, what was an occasional habit became just a full-on 100% abusive use of these medications, and it really caused so much pain mm-hmm. and suffering in this person's life.
Well, knowing what you have written in the book, there are so many things that people can do, but if somebody recognizes, I think I have a problem, what do you suggest they do?
The first thing is to take as honest an appraisal as possible of what their relationship is to drugs and what drugs have done in their lives, what pain, suffering, problems drugs may have caused. And if, you know, they could read our book, for example, there are online resources. If they can take action themselves and help themselves, that would be terrific. Many people go to AA or NA meetings. Mm-hmm. And contrary to what many people think, the sole requirement for going to one of those meetings is that you have a desire to stop using the drug or
right.
the substance.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you have to be fully addicted to go to those meetings. It doesn't mean that you have to be completely abstinent and totally clean to go to those meetings. You just have to have a desire. And, you know, for many people, going to those meetings, hearing the stories of other people about, you know, pain and suffering the drugs and alcohol have caused for them also is another way of attacking the problem. You hear these stories, they sink in, you imbibe their message, and maybe yeah, that's enough. But for some people, they might need to enter therapy with a counselor who's savvy about substance use. Some people are, you know, religiously inclined, going to a clergy person for help, a primary care physician. So there are lots of things people can do for themselves if they're thinking that maybe, you know, they are almost addicted.
Okay. So if they want to get your book, how do they do it?
It's available through most of the large online retailers and in many bookstores it's available as well. And I have a link on my own personal website, which is jwesleyboyd.com, where people can also find the book.
Okay. Well, if family members recognize that their loved one has a problem, you recommend opening a dialogue to talk about it, correct?
Yeah. And again, this is often easier said than done. But if you are concerned, talk to the person and try to stick to the facts with as little emotion as possible. And again, it's, as I said, easier said than done, because many times family members have been burned in various ways as a result of someone else using drugs.
Okay.
But the reason to stick to the facts is it's less, there's less judgment in it to say, you know, 3 days ago you did not show up to the family function and you had been using drugs the night before, and it seems that there was a relationship.
Okay,
well, as opposed to, yeah, please.
I'm sorry, but our time has run out. So what I would recommend to them is these are good tidbits. Now go read the book, Almost Addicted, by Dr. Wesley Boyd with Eric Metcalf, and you can find it at most bookstores or online. So thank you very much, Dr. Boyd, for this information, and I invite you to come back when you've got more research we can talk about in the future.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has just been a pleasure, and thank you for your interest in the book.
Well, thank you. All right.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you, or is someone you know, struggling with life? Do you know that your subconscious beliefs play a big role in the outcome of your hard work? We can help you to permanently change your beliefs that may not be in alignment with your goals. We care about getting you a return on your investment. We can help you reach your goals easily and quickly. Contact us at BeliefMantra.com. That's BeliefMantra.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792.
That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. Dr. Boyd educated us about what it means to be almost addicted. Now, psychologist Dr. Rob Van Overbruggen will tell us how we can positively impact cancer using psychological approaches. Welcome, Dr. Rob.
Thank you, Dr. Melanie.
Your book, I thought, would take me weeks to read it because it's like 438 pages, but I finished it in about 2 or 3 days. So it's a good read.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I was impressed with how much research you have read and included in the book. And I was interested because you did this originally as your dissertation, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And why did you choose this topic about cancer and psychological aspects?
I was looking into the NLP field and in the hypnotherapy field. And then I came across a story about Mr. Wright. And Mr. Wright is a story about someone in the 1950s who recovered from cancer, basically by a placebo. Mm-hmm. And then the tumor got away. And then in the news came a newscast that the medication wasn't useful at all.
Right.
And then the tumor got back. And then the doctor decided to do something different. He injected pure water, distilled water, and the tumor mm-hmm. disappeared again for the second time.
Right.
And then in the news came another time that the medication was totally useless. There was no document effect whatsoever. And then the tumor came back again. And that sparked my interest. I thought, there's knowledge to get there. There's information to distill here. And I'm a kind of a person that I'm looking for patterns all over my life in where can I add something and how does this function? And that's actually the second spark that that brought me on this search for the psychological influences on cancer. Mm-hmm. And the first spark was actually my granddad dying from cancer, and I couldn't do anything about it.
Oh.
I was so frustrated that I couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if he were alive today, you could do something that you couldn't do back then?
Yes, definitely.
Uh-huh.
And on one, he was 84 when he died. So, what I could have done is that he would die peacefully,
mm-hmm.
instead
mm-hmm.
of cursing and saying all those words when noticing that he was still alive. That's
right.
Basically the story.
Mm-hmm.
He was terminally ill. The doctor said he wouldn't make it to the morning, and each
yes.
morning he came down cursing. Damn, I'm still alive.
Uh-huh.
I'm European, so I tend to say whatever comes in my mind, but I don't know
what's
allowed in the radio show here.
It's okay. It's okay. Well, my mom was declared terminal and said that she might have 2 weeks, and she got into a comatose state, and we thought that was it. And then she woke up, literally woke up, and said she wanted to go on a picnic, and she lived 5 more months and did everything she wanted to do.
Wow.
Yeah, excellent. So doctors don't know.
No, and that's actually very important to realize that when you get a prognosis of you have certain months to live, that's just a prognosis, like somebody fortune-telling anything which they don't know of.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still have a lovely months, years, decades with the
yes.
same prognosis.
Yes, yes. I like what you delineated in the book about the difference between a cure of cancer and being healed. Can you explain to the listeners the difference between the two?
For me, the difference is cure is the medical term of the symptoms are no longer there or
yes.
they're no longer a problem. And for mm-hmm. me, healed is way beyond that. Like, the symptoms can still be there, but they don't trouble you so much. You don't have to fear anymore. You can live again. You can have fun again. And the paradox is actually when you have fun again and when you start living more, the symptoms tend to reduce.
Yes. Yes.
So you can cure without being healed.
Right.
And when you're healed, you don't care about if there's certain symptoms there or not, because you feel happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I got colon cancer, I was going through a divorce, and it was a pretty traumatic ending to a 40-year marriage. And I mm-hmm. know that that contributed to the growth of the tumor because mm-hmm. it grew too fast. You know, I read all your research saying, you know, it might take 10 years for a tumor to grow. Well, they had just checked me with a colonoscopy like a couple years before, and there was nothing there. And mm-hmm. then to have one this size, I know that it was all my stuffed emotions and things that I had repressed and hadn't resolved. And I think it just grew inside of me. That's mm-hmm. my image of it. So yeah, I don't know what you think about that, but that's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Usually things about the colon is not able to digest something, not getting rid of something, depending on where it is in the colon.
Yes.
And usually has to do something with a deep root cause of anger.
Yes.
In relationship, often in relationship to family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Family or close friends.
Well, it was a pattern in my family that my mother's mother had colon cancer. She came to live with us. My mm-hmm. mother got colon cancer. She came to live with us, with me mm-hmm. and my spouse. I got colon cancer, got divorced, and went to live with my daughter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's time for a family pattern to change.
Yeah, and the family pattern is also probably to do with psychology, like how you deal with stress.
Yes.
You probably keep stress inside and not show it, and keeping up appearances like that.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. That had been the family pattern, but that's now, because of what I've learned in reading your book, I understand the connection to the psychological. So I've really worked hard to change the pattern in myself and to become more expressive and not mm-hmm. to hold things back. That isn't always welcomed by those on the receiving end.
No, but it's definitely more healthy than not.
Yes, it is. Yes, definitely. Definitely.
And on the other hand, when you start changing psychological patterns, you also get new friends.
Yes, yes. You attract the kind of people by the way you behave. And so as you are healthier, you'll attract healthier people into your life.
Mm-hmm. Including healthier behavioral patterns.
Yes. Yes. You say that true healing happens with medical and psychological interventions. Tell our listeners what you mean by psychological interventions.
Usually people get a certain symptom, and I think most of the symptoms have a psychological component of it. And you can treat a certain symptom with medication or operations or whatever. But if you don't treat this psychological component of it, you never be truly healed. And by psychological intervention, I mean letting go of the trouble you had from the past, let go of the stress you had from the past. Like you said yourself, change behavioral patterns that bring you into trouble, that bring mm-hmm. you into stressful events. Have a goal in life. What do you focus on? Because when you look at people who spontaneously cured themselves from cancer, and there are quite a few research papers on that, is that one of the core patterns that they did is they formulate a new goal in their life.
Yes.
For example, the children went out of their house, and they suddenly found, like, what's my goal in life? Where do I need to go? And then they got sick, and then they started, okay, I need a new goal in life. And they became a caretaker, or they bought a dog, or they find a new hobby, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Something to live for.
Yeah, definitely. And that was my case, too, that I look at cancer as a gift, that it gave me permission to stop the speed that I was going, the direction I was going, and to reassess, where do I want to go? What do I mm-hmm. want to do? And then to do the redirection.
Mm-hmm. And when you can see cancer as a gift or as a message, then you can get so much learning out of it and to take the power to change that what you always wanted to change.
Mm-hmm. It gave me the permission, I guess, to say, I have to take care of me right now. I have to put mm-hmm. me first and my health first. And mm-hmm. I think that's a very important message, that what I read in all your research in the book is that people who get cancer often put themselves last.
Correct.
And it's time to change that.
Mm-hmm. You just reframed it quite beautifully. You took control back into your life. You mm-hmm. took control of your health and your wellness into your own hands. Mm-hmm. And that's the other aspect that a lot of people who have spontaneously cured themselves from cancer did, is they took control back into the life of their own healing and all well-being. And that can be in extreme proportions, like I decide what kind of treatment I want.
Yes.
But it also can be in small proportions, like if you're in a hospital saying, I don't want the peas tonight, I'd like to have some carrots instead. Or, doctor, can you please come back half an hour later because right now I have visitors.
Yes.
That's also taking control back to your own, into your own control, into your own life.
Yes. And it's hard to get somebody who spent their whole life being compliant to understand that they have the right to be a partner in their care and their treatment and to have a say-so, that they don't have to just be this guinea pig or this compliant little patient.
Correct. And it's my job, it's my wish that people take control and take action and decide that they don't have to be compliant. Actually, they have the obligation not to be compliant, but the obligation to take decisions based on what doctors say to them and what information they got, to decide, hey, this is my course, this is my path towards health and well-being.
And to even say, I'm done. I don't want any more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, definitely. That's also a valid choice. This is what I want. This is what I don't want. That's it.
Right. And the right to change your mind. If you decide, okay, I tried that. I don't want to finish that.
Yeah. It's change your mind. And because you change your mind because of new insights.
Yes.
You have
yes.
certain experiences and think, no, that's not the way I want to. I'd rather go this course because it feels better.
Right. And I even changed oncologists, which is very difficult to do because insurance companies don't like that. But I needed to get one that was going to be what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that. And I'm actually on the third one now. And that one left. So I may have to get another one. So,
mm-hmm.
But it's what's healthy for me.
I always advise people, if they're not happy with their physician, change.
Yes.
If they're not listening, if they don't follow your advice, if they're not on the same frequency, change.
Yes.
Because
yes.
they're there to help you. Heal.
Right.
Not
right.
the other way around.
That's right.
You're
well,
not there
it's
to help the physician.
Right. All right. Well, it's time for us to take a break. This is interesting, but let's take a break and come back and talk some more.
Okay.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Like 30 million other Americans, I have interstitial cystitis, a chronic inflammatory disease that feels like a bladder infection or prostatitis for men. Desert Harvest Concentrated Aloe Vera helps. It appears to give analgesic properties while coating the bladder. It's the only one that has a phase one trial. It's whole processed, whole leaf, and extremely concentrated. Go to desertharvest.com to order or call 1-800-222-3901. Tell them Dr. Melanie sent you. 1-800-222-3901.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now,
back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. Dr. Rob van Overbruggen is teaching us about the psychological factors that influence the development of cancer. I know some of these factors affected my own cancer development, so let's find out some more. So, Dr. Rob, you say that grief and depression can play a part in the development or progression of cancer. How does it do that? What does it do?
It's grief, depression, and actually all kind of negative emotions, emotions that bother you, like guilt, shame, anger, sadness. What they do is they take away some of the mental, emotional energy that is needed for healing. And the best way and the easiest way to explain it is to try to win the gold medal swimming at the same time holding a ball under the water.
Mm.
With one hand, hold a ball under the water and still try to win the gold medal in swimming. It's impossible.
Right.
Because part of the energy is used to keep the emotions stored and away from your consciousness. And it takes up so much energy. It's better to work with someone and release those emotions so you can focus your energy to our health.
Okay. Well, that's difficult for some people to do because they've been keeping them under check for so long. They're going to need help to get that out. So if somebody has been diagnosed with cancer, would you recommend that oncology departments should have a team, including a psychologist on staff, to help people deal with these things?
Definitely some specialist on emotional issues and emotional clearing techniques. And they can be on staff, or they can be on an advisory board, or they can be on a referral based. That clients, when they come in, or patients, when they come in and hear the diagnosis, they can be referred or they can be put into contact with a specialist in clearing those emotions. And it's actually two types of emotions. One of them is emotions from the past in general issues, not related to disease. But the other one is emotions directly related to hearing a diagnosis.
Yes.
It's pretty heavy to hear such a diagnosis.
Because you automatically think it's a death sentence.
Definitely, and it doesn't have to be because, like you said yourself, like your own history, there are many, 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 many people who survived and are still happy today.
Yes, yes. Well, you say that believing somebody can overcome an illness is associated with the positive prognosis, but what if a person doesn't have that belief? Can they get that belief? Can somebody help them arrive at that believing place to help them have a better life expectancy?
Yes.
Okay.
When you don't have the belief, you actually have the belief that it's not possible. And you can work with somebody to change those beliefs into the believing it is possible. Because literature, and that's actually one of the ways that my book can be really helpful, is there are so many references, as you see, that people did something and that's science already proved that changing psychology is a progression towards health.
Right.
And that actually that thinking that way and reading the literature and reading the books about it and hearing stories about people who cured themselves from cancer is actually changing the belief. It's actually changing the cancer equals death kind of general feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you hear around you that like, 95% of the people you speak to survived cancer, then you get a whole different meaning of the word cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you say that 55% of all healings are due to the placebo effect. And, you know, if people know what that term means, they're going to think, oh, well, then they gave me something fake and that I believe that fake thing made me get healed. So explain it better, please.
Mm-hmm. The placebo effect is actually the working of a medication or a substance where the substance was not actually doing the changing. And when you look at the placebo effect, is they did a few studies where thinking that the medication or thinking that the substance is effective was actually more effective than the substance itself. A simple example is they did a study with two groups, group A and group B. And group A, they gave tranquilizers, but mm-hmm. they set it for speed. So they actually, the physiology of those group A people was tend to lower their energy because they were given tranquilizers, mm-hmm. but they were only thinking they got speed.
Uh-huh.
And group B got speed, so uppers, so they would, physiology would create energy, but they were said, you are getting tranquilizers.
Mm-hmm.
And what they observed is that both groups acted more on the way they thought
yes.
the medication worked than the actual physical reaction of the medication.
Mm-hmm. So the other 45%, beyond the 55% that are due to the placebo effect, what about the other 45%? What's that?
The other 45% is attributed to medication or traditional treatments.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to take out the placebo effect because even if you're in a study, you can still think, I'm never going to get the placebo. And then the placebo doesn't work for you.
Right. Yes.
And if you have a very strong conviction, that's why we get up what we talked a little bit earlier about is deciding on your own treatment. If you think this treatment will work for me, then you take the 55% with you, the 55%
yes.
of the placebo effect, and think, this is my way. This is the way I need to heal myself.
Yes. So it has to do with your belief. But
mm-hmm.
our unconscious beliefs can also affect the outcome of things.
Mm-hmm.
And in a positive or negative way.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, if we don't think we deserve to be healthy, then it doesn't mm-hmm. matter what you take or what you do. And that
doesn't
could
matter.
Have been instilled in us, you know, as a young child by what we were told growing up. We might not have any conscious awareness of it, but if you were told as a child you're never going to amount to anything, well, you may not believe you have the right to be well.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So, yeah, lots of things.
And if the beliefs are unconscious, you need to do a little bit more extra work to get them into consciousness and change them on an unconscious level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it can be done, but you've got to get the person there to help
yeah.
them.
Definitely.
And it may be somebody who has had success that can go to somebody that's stuck, who doesn't believe that they can get better, to encourage them to say, look, I used to be in that place. Look where I am now. Let's
mm-hmm.
go together and offer to help them.
Beautiful. And that's why I tell everybody that I meet who survived cancer, please tell it to as many people as you want and get your story out.
Mm-hmm.
So people hear about the possibilities and see that there's more to life than just the diagnosis.
Yes. Well, before we run out of time, I want to tell them about the special you're offering today, about if they get your book today, they
mm-hmm.
can get it at a discount. You want to tell them about that?
Yeah, the normal price of my book is $44. And for the listeners of the Dr. Melanie Show, there's a few hours that the book is on a very special sale. And then it's only $17.
Mm-hmm.
And
if they go to www.healingpsyche.com/DrMelanie/, correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. Well, in the little bit of time we have left, what would you say that people can do to head off cancer? So if they aren't an optimistic person right now or don't have a lot of positive things in their mind, how can they head it off? What can they do psychologically?
Start working on resolving negative issues. Start resolving on negative issues, emotions like guilt, shame, sadness, anger, fear, hurt. Work with those issues and emotions and start clearing them. There are many, many therapists around there that can brilliantly help you and get rid of those emotions. And if you're not going to ward off cancer, you still are a happier person afterwards.
Okay. Well, this has been very informative and enlightening, and I appreciate you greatly coming all the way from the Netherlands to be on this interview with me. So thank you, and I hope many people will go read your book because I think it could really make a difference. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, now, listeners, it's time to wrap up today's show. I thank you for listening. I would like you to like me on Facebook. Tell your friends to tune in or download an episode. Write on my blog at thedrmelanieshow.com. Tell me what topics interest you. If you want to reach Dr. Boyd, you can do so at www.jwesleyboyd.com. To reach Dr. Rob Van Overbruggen, go to healingpsyche.com, and then to get the book today, go to /drmelanie. Now, next week, we're going to learn about two men's work impacting the lives of youth. Remember, to help yourself, help someone else. Until next week, goodbye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us this week for the Dr. Melanie Show. Please join your host, Dr. Melanie Barton, again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll see you next week for another great program.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.